Welcome to the Personal Injury Marketing Minute, where we quickly cover the hot topics in the legal marketing world. I'm your host, Lindsay Busfield. Social media has been all over the news for the past few months. In January 2024, the Senate Judiciary Committee held a full committee hearing with testimony from some of the largest social media CEOs in an effort to examine big tech's failures to protect kids from sexual exploitation online. In addition to some of the most heinous offenses, social media has also been scrutinized for intentionally forming addictive behaviors and inflicting harm on kids. Yet very little has been done to hold these giants accountable. Steve Levin, founding partner of Levin and Percanti in Chicago, joins us today. He has been diligently working on ways to hold social media companies legally accountable for the harm that they are causing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lindsay, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you got involved in social media accountability.
Well, Lindsay, we are trial lawyers. And one of my beliefs that a trial lawyer's job is not only to help our clients who have been harmed or even killed, but to try to affect change, to try to disincentivize corporations for engaging in unreasonable behavior that causes foreseeable harm. So some time ago, we're no stranger to tough and groundbreaking litigation. We established a practice some years ago representing nursing home residents and their families at a time where no one thought they were entitled to any rights at all. No one thought there was any standard of care. We were basically warehousing our elderly in institutions where they receive no care. And it was a tough go at first because those kinds of suits were not thought of being valuable. Older people's lives didn't have value. They weren't wage earners. They had multiple medical conditions. They had short life expectancies. No one was dependent on them for support. So the thought was the litigation system wasn't for them. Well, that proved to be wrong. That proved to be that jurors do recognize harm, whether they're tangible harms like economic losses, or more importantly, in my view, intangible harms, damages, pain, suffering, disability, disfigurement, loss of dignity. And I think what we were able to do through the litigation process is get down to details that government regulators can't get to, even if they're inclined to get to them. Sometimes the regulators are a little too close to the people that they regulate. But even the most well-intentioned regulators does not have the resources that we have trial lawyers have, the depositions, the ability to scrutinize document, years of litigation. And then we really find out why the harm occurred. In the nursing home context, no staffing. And they know this. And in their documents, they say this. So that brings us to social media litigation. In my opinion, social media is a product. The product that they're selling to the advertisers is their viewers' attention. And they are, like any good business, from a strictly business point of view, are engaged in thinking of any way they can to engage people's attention and keep it as long as they have. Unfortunately, this does not affect our children appropriately. Sometimes I think to myself, let's imagine a world where there is no social media for children. I think you as a parent and me as a parent, as a grandparent would say, that would be the best thing that could ever happen.
It really would.
You know, there's articles written all the time about how bad it is. I have yet to see an article saying, let's get more social media for our kids. So already we have an industry that, at least superficially and maybe much deeper, does really know social good. And that's especially magnified with children. So now let's imagine something else. Before social media, you would have a child and you say, well, I'm going to put my child in a situation where I don't know the people that they're coming in contact with. I don't know the strangers. I don't know the bad guys for the good guys. And I'm in essence exposing them to everything good, but potentially bad in the world. They're doing it from their home, so they're not physically in danger. But think about that. What parent would ever accept that scenario? So that is what I think is the harm with social media. There was an actress, I think it was Jennifer Garner, who said, I want to keep my kids off social media. I'll let them back on when they show me one single thing that's ever been written that says it's good. But now every parent, and you and I were discussed this as when we met each other, every parent has said, well, I don't like it, but what can I do about it? Because it's taken over our kids' worlds. You can only take your kid off social media within reason, because you're in essence ostracizing your child from all the other inputs, all the other friends and people have. So now parents are in a really, really tough situation. So what is the solution? I think the solution is going to come from trial lawyers, because as you noted in the introduction, Congress has hearings and they yell and scream and attack the executives for 3, 4, 5 hours, and then it goes away. Because they don't, for numerous reasons, either have the time, the resources, or even the inclination to do the job necessary to regulate them. They just don't. That's if they're inclined to regulate them. And sometimes they're not even inclined to do that. So for the first time in my career as a plaintiff trial lawyer, I was hearing Republican senators saying, hey, here's what the solution is. We're going to turn you over to the trial lawyer. And we're going to see what other people think of your conduct in the context of a jury. And Lindsey Graham and Josh Hawley and very conservative Republican senators have been saying that they're actually using us as a threat, because part of our job as trial lawyers is to level the playing field, beat up on the bullies, enforce the rights of consumers who have no other rights. Stand up for parents whose children are in this situation and they don't know what to do and don't have all the answers. And that's what I think we're going to do. So it's going to be an uphill fight, but anyone in this area knows there's this law that gives social media immunity from lawsuits based on the content on their site. Third-party content. Well, everything on their site is third-party content. So if they're not responsible for the third-party content on their site, it's going to be very hard to sue them. Why should they have that immunity where no other business in America has it? Let's go back to the days of autos. Autos are much, much, much safer today than they were 30 years ago because of lawsuits. But the one difference you could say about autos as opposed to social media, at least they have a social purpose. People need them from get to place to place. But the manufacturers in the old days were manufacturing autos to sell them, and they weren't concerned with safety. Lawsuits over time, over and over again, has made that unacceptable, and now automobiles are safer as a result of lawsuits. Some ways, a better analogy to social media litigation is tobacco, because again, no one says, let's smoke tobacco because it's a good thing. It's an addictive product for a number of reasons people use, but I have never heard anyone heralding the advantage of smoking cigarettes. The argument is, well, people should be able to do what they want, and if they're going to harm themselves, it's their business and it's not the manufacturer of cigarettes business. Again, that proved to be wrong, because tobacco, just like social media, addicted its users. Not only did it addict its users, the manufacturers knew it was addicting its users, and they knew that those users were going to be harmed or killed. Same thing with opiates. So I view our job as trial lawyers is to correct these sort of harms by individual lawsuits. So another way to look at, well, before I go there, let's talk about the difference between the executive branch, the legislative branch, and juries. Juries really are the conscience of the community. Think of the difference. They're not corruptible. They're not trying to get elected. They're not trying to get a better job. They're not beholden to lobbyists. They just look at the facts and try to determine whether or not the defendant is the person that we sue is engaging in unreasonable behavior that will cause foreseeable harm. And once we can get these cases into court, and that's going to be a big battle because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. But once we can get these cases in the court, and once we bring these cases in front of juries, social media will have a full and fair opportunity to explain whether or not their behavior is reasonable or unreasonable, whether or not they know that it's causing harm or not, whether or not that they've taken any actions of any kind to prevent the harm that their behavior causes. So that's sort of what got me into social media litigation. I just think it's such an important area for lawyers to get into. But these cases are hard, they're expensive, they're going to be hard fought. We're dealing with really the richest companies in America, which is ironic when you think about it. They're the only ones that apparently have some sort of immunity. No one else does. Why they have it, I don't know. I mean, you could give, you know, nonprofit hospitals immunity, but they're doing something good. They're getting immunity for, I don't know what they're doing, especially when it comes to children. I mean, we can make this argument in different ways, but children is what we're concerned about because they are clearly, no one would deny it being victimized. And that's just not trial lawyers said it. The Surgeon General said it. The CDC said it. There's a plethora of academic articles about it. The American Academy of Pediatrics said it. There's only one view of this. Not one reputable organization or academic study said social media is good for kids.
You're absolutely right. There's absolutely no value. There's nobody out there saying, man, if only my child would spend at least 30 more minutes on social media a day. And having them being the target of this parallels what you were saying with the tobacco industry, where you think about the old ad campaigns with the Joe Cool that was intentionally marketing to kids. And, you know, they can go back and forth saying that they weren't, but having those ad placements and the way that they were designed was attracting that younger audience and who doesn't necessarily have the same sense of discretion in the products and services that they're using. And let's kind of get into the nitty-gritty about the harms and damages that are being proven to impact children and other individuals.
Well, I mean, the harms include eating disorders, suicidal ideation, actually putting kids in contact with sexual predators. It includes anxiety, it includes depression, it includes all the thing that addictive behavior leads to. With not even talking about the simple things that it does, is it good for kids to sit in front of screens all day? Is it good to kids to be on their phones, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day a week? Again, every parent has seen it. They can't get off the media. They just can't. And it's not an accident. It's the algorithms, and these are the nitty-gritty, of this company is designed just like, and what you said was exactly right when you talk about tobacco. The algorithms are designed to give users, they call it a dopamine rush. They give users a good feeling, likes and messages and targeting the things that you like, and the fear of missing out. They actually use every single trick that they can think of to addict these children to the site. And there are no time restrictions. And the harm of the things that I'm talking about, anxiety, depression, fear of missing out, eating disorders, suicidal ideation, becomes increased the longer you stay on the site. But again, think about what their business is. We want as many people on the site as long as possible because that's what we're selling to our advertisers. So
Absolutely.
this is
It's an
not an
attention-based
accident.
economy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an accident. Their business purpose is the exact opposite for child's health. So, those are the algorithms and those are some of the tricks that they use. Now, the question I think you're asking, the nitty-gritty is, what is a lawsuit about? Well, in my opinion, social media companies have a duty to the consumers. And interestingly enough, the consumers typically aren't the ones, I mean, there's variations of everything I'm saying, that are paying the money. The advertisers are paying for the consumers' attention. But do they have some obligation to the consumers? It's ridiculous at this point to say they're not responsible for the conduct. The content. The content is not getting there accidentally. It's not like, it's so important that it's not like a public forum. It's not. And so what do you need for a successful lawsuit? You need that they owe a duty to the consumers to engage in behavior that's not unreasonable. Either they're negligent in things like not allowing parental controls, and for the parents listening here, there are now third-party apps that can make it easier for parents to monitor their kids' social media, where the parent has an app and it's triggered by certain words that are used. Because if a parent has multiple children, they cannot spend their whole day reading every single thing on their app. So, but the social media companies make it hard for that interface to work. There could be age minimum restrictions. There could be time restrictions. There could be explicit warnings. So there are a number of things that they're doing that I would say are not reasonable for the unsafe product that they're putting out there. And those are what the suits are about. Now, many of these theories are novel theories, but so is tobacco litigation. People used to say, well, you can't sue for something you're voluntarily doing. Well, maybe you can if someone is addicting you to it. And it turned out you can.
Well, and it
So
seems
that's
like
where
there
the
are
case.
so many other similar cases out there that would negate every issue that they're bringing up, like with a third party presenting content. Well, if you have an auto manufacturer and they have a third party who is developing the seat belts and they're just purchasing the seat belts to put in their car, the auto manufacturer would still be liable for a defective product that's put into the car that they're selling, wouldn't you think?
I would think so. What the social media companies are not doing, in my opinion, is prioritizing consumer safety. They're reacting when people attack them. They're coming up with stopgap solutions when things happen, but they are not prioritizing it. And the reason is a business reason. They would get less viewers that would be on less time if they prioritized consumer safety. What lawsuits hopefully can do is compensate the victims while at the same time disincentivizing these companies in a monetary fashion so that they will prioritize consumer safety, that they will sacrifice profit for kids' mental health. And that's what really we hope happens as a result of these type of this type of litigation.
Well,
You're
and you have all
right.
the pieces here together where you have the social media companies that are out there who are just proving to be negligent in their duty of care to protect, especially the ch children consumers of their product. They're getting them addicted to it. There are damages, there are harms, and this seems like a very no-brainer. And yet you say it's an uphill battle for law firms to be able to hold social media companies accountable. What are some of the obstacles that are in place, and what needs to happen in order for these lawsuits to move forward?
Well, I mean, I would advocate there's a federal law commonly referred to as Section 230. And that is the law that immunizes social media companies from being sued from someone harmed by the content on their site. in my opinion, that law should be eliminated or substantially limited in its scope. And I think there is some movement in the federal government to do that. I mean, everyone seems to be in agreement. Again, unlike other issues in our divisive society, I haven't heard anyone standing up for the necessity of social media for children. And I think that's one, I don't know if we call that a good or a bad thing, but that's one area where people are united. So maybe we can get rid of that law. What we're trying to do as lawyers litigating these cases is not saying we're not really, it's a thin line. We're not really suing the social media companies for their content. We're suing them for their methodology in addicting people to the content that someone else placed on the site. And I think that's a better way of looking at it, because put the content on there, but don't give kids 24-hour a day, 7 day a week access to it. Don't make it so easy to sign up. Don't make it so hard to cancel. Take steps that are designed to make it safer. Don't make it so hard for parents to monitor it. And again, it's not just trial lawyers saying this. It's in addition to the people I said before, attorney generals are outraged, school districts are outraged. It's really an odd thing when you think about something like Facebook that started, in a situation. One of my children went to school at the same time, Zuckerberg, and he went to the same school. Now, when it was started, it was probably a way for him to meet girls or something. Or actually to punish the girls that he felt didn't treat him properly. Okay. And it had no scope at all. And now it's grown into something that is so immense. And the law always has difficulty keeping up with rapidly changing technological advances. As the Congress people are grilling the tech executives about something that happened, 4 weeks ago, AI has made it 100 times worse. That's why I'm such a believer in the jury system, because they are the closest form of government to the people. They're just 12 citizens in our jurisdiction from your community that are the concept. And regardless of the advances in technology, they can determine what behavior is reasonable and what behavior isn't reasonable, and whether companies that engage in unreasonable behavior that they know is harmful should be punished. And that's what we're going to. So that one obstacle is removing Section 230. Another obstacle is for lawyers, and it's sort of like, erosion. This always happens. It looks impossible. Then there's a breakthrough here, and then there's a breakthrough there. And some courts are recognizing, okay, well, Section 230 gives them immunity, but do they have, are they acting reasonable in the content on their site, or they're acting reasonable as they interface consumers and getting them to stay on the site? And that's, I think it's going to take time, and it's going to, you're fighting a multi-billion dollar industry. But usually, in my experience, right will eventually prevail. And it'll embolden parents and it'll make it easier. I mean, part of the, besides monetary recoveries, besides punishing them with financial awards, I think it will embolden parents or school districts or groups of parents or PTAs, because everyone knows it's wrong, but I don't think anyone thought deeply enough that it's just something we have to live with. As a parent, we say, well, we have to live with it. Well, maybe we don't. Maybe it can be changed in a way where it's tolerable for parents. Why don't they do any of these things? Well, I think the answer is usually just, profit. That's, I mean, it's okay to make a profit. I'm not against that, but you can't make the profit at the expense of our children's lives without being responsible for what you're doing. You know, we didn't even talk about cyber bullying. Now, kids always bully. You know, here's another huge problem that's unreasonable. It's an enormous platform to amplify bad behavior, to amplify harm. You know, maybe kids would get bullied in the playground, but you know, you could see it. It can be addressed. It's not a good thing. But our kids are being bullied, using my earlier analogy, in neighborhoods and in areas. The parents don't even understand it. And if you learn about it today, in 2 months, someone will come up with something that you won't understand. So you're not powerless as a parent, but you're very seriously, you know, challenged to deal with it because it's so changing. And there are another unreasonable aspect of what they do. They do make it hard. They make it easy for kids to evade their parents'
They do.
supervision on social media. Because you know, you're a mom or a dad, and you're not a tech engineer, and you're not in it. And unfortunately, kids seem to have a much better ability to learn it, adapt to it, and work with it. It's like learning a foreign language, right? They know it better than us. So, and social media knows that.
And the
So,
lingo is constantly changing as well as the technology. And kids are mean. Like, there are just a lot of really mean kids out there that will find creative ways to just keep being mean. And I don't want to be a helicopter mom, but oh my goodness, I want to protect my kids from unnecessary roughness out there. Like, that's, and
right.
it was so much easier when I was growing up, where, you know, parents were, as you said, like out of the playground, they can see which kids are, you know, causing trouble, and you can kind of steer your own kids away from them. But when it comes to, you know, digital cyberbullying, there's no steering wheel. Like, I can't pick my kid up and be like, oh, well, we're gonna block their account. If
Right.
I'm not the one who's actively seeing it all the time.
As a little a spin-off of that. So in litigation, everyone wants to look at each other, general litigation, look at each other's social media account. So I used to say to my younger clients, but even the older ones, well, you can't go on social media. Well, that's like telling them, go in your room, lock the door, and don't talk to another human. That's not possible. That has its own effect, right?
Right.
So I realize that's not possible. So at best, and this is what we're asking the companies to do, really, I say, well, just be very, very, very conscious of what you put on there. And it should be, in my opinion, and this is what these lawsuits are about, and this is what's unreasonable, it should be their burden to not make it so difficult that parents cannot monitor it and select it and regulate it in any realistic way, because it's for all the reasons that we've discussed.
Well, and likening it back to the tobacco industry, there were age restrictions put on how old you have to be to purchase cigarettes or other tobacco products. And there should be similar thresholds in place. Yeah, part of the responsibility of me as a mother is to make sure that my 12-year-old isn't going out and buying a pack of smokes, but that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be something in place that is a barrier, preventative measure, keeping them away from an intentionally addictive substance.
I think you're 100% right. That's really the perfect analogy. And it's perfect in the sense also, as we said earlier, I'm not sure what socially redeeming purpose tobacco serves anyways, but it's just like social media. It's really odd when you think about it. I mean, 10 years ago, this didn't exist. It's not like some crucial thing that, you know, okay, you know, medical care has its problems, but medical care is a necessary. Sometimes doctors are negligent and there's lawsuits, but they have a obviously very, very strong social redeeming purpose that just doesn't exist in social media as I see it. And you know, we're just touching on some of the problems of it. At its best, what does it do? It decreases mobility. It prevents reading. It interferes with kids' ability to interact with other kids in a real world. It's really just putting kids in a virtual world. and it preys upon the most vulnerable of kids, which is another problem. The lonelier the child, or the more awkward the child, the more vulnerable they are.
And the more they crave that, the likes and the attention, especially when they're going through that awkward phase. And these teenagers who just seem to be starved for attention. They're posting pictures and, here's my sandwich. Don't you like my sandwich?
Oh.
I mean, anything that they can do to get that positive reinforcement. And unfortunately, social media is replacing that in so many ways where it should be coming from organic sources like your family and your friends. And you should be going out and doing something to earn accolades as opposed to taking a picture of your sandwich and being like, here's, particularly a tasty meal.
You're not eating this sandwich, and none of us are immune. I mean, I laugh at myself because I'm on I'm in a beautiful vacation spot with my family, enjoying everything. I look on someone's Facebook and I'm saying, "Wow, they must be having more fun. Let's look at the picture." You get confused between what's the real world and what's the social media world. I have to remind myself, no, you're having fun. But now put myself in the mind of an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old child. They don't have that ability to make that distinction. They think they're missing out on the whole world.
Well, I'm
And
100% guilty of that as well. I went on a similar family vacation just a few weeks ago. We went to Antigua. It was beautiful. We spent time at the beach, had the kids there, had my husband there. We were taking these great pictures. What wasn't photographed was the hours from 1 to 4 where my 2-year-old was up screaming in the middle of the night, and I just want them to go to sleep. And the kids are fighting and like slapping each other. And so half of this vacation was trying to come back home with the same 2 children that I came with. But all that's in the pictures is the beautiful sunset and the Mai Tai. And there's no way to discern that, especially if I'm not giving the whole story to someone. And I think most of us are guilty of that, of posting our highlights and not giving a complete picture. And that is where the depression sets in and the FOMO sets in and all of these negative repercussions, because we are just comparing ourselves and our lives to our friends and our colleagues that are out there, and we don't see the whole picture. And that is a million times worse as a 14-year-old who doesn't have a view of the world where they can say, oh, there's probably some good and some bad mixed together in there, and we're only seeing the highlights.
well said. I mean, that is a huge, huge negative impact of it. It just is. And again, that's why we're focusing on kids, because they're the ones that are really being victimized. We don't even know how they're going to turn out as adults, but we know the immediate harms that are occurring. So to be really specific of the type of theories, negligence theories that were alleging against these social media is failure to provide effective parental controls, failure to provide users with time restriction methods, making it difficult for users to delete accounts, failure to use effective age verification methods, making it difficult to report predators. Now, that's a whole nother really bad problem out there. Providing appearance filters, failure to label filter content, requiring users to establish accounts to report sexual, they should be doing this, predators and abuse, and violating sometimes criminal laws. I mean, or the content violates criminal laws, and they're saying, oh, well, we're not responsible for it, like it got there. Who could put this contact in? I mean, it's not like we're talking about the First Amendment here. This isn't political speech. Who could put this content on then unless they allowed it? Is there any? We've talked about is social media good or bad, but then the next question for kids is there content on social media that's regularly used by children that's good? I don't know. I mean, I know I'm overstating the case, but I would say if any parent listening to us chat, your comments and mine would say, wow, that sounds familiar. What do we do about it? And that's what we hope that we can do. So that's the negligence theory. There's also the product liability theory, which is used again in auto and other dangerous drugs and all that, which is it defectively designed because it doesn't have the things that we talked about? And I would argue that it is defectively designed. Another defect is, are there appropriate warnings? Why shouldn't there be warnings? If I'm manufacturing a product, and let's just start thinking of it as a product, because that it is a product. I don't know why else it exists. So if I'm manufacturing a product that has the known potential to harm your kids, don't I have an obligation to warn you?
I would absolutely think so. Again, likening it to the cigarette theory, it has a cigarettes have a known they are known to cause cancer, emphysema, and other dangerous diseases as a direct result. And having credible theories that are linking credible proof that's linking social media to mental health disorders, which should be treated in the same way as, a cancer and emphysema, there should be warning labels out there.
That's what we're arguing, and it's defective as or not. Another good analogy, and this to me, this angers me, but have you ever seen the gambling commercials where they make it like your whole life would be a million times better if you could do something or go somewhere and lose all your money?
It'd be great.
Anyone would do it. You could just do it, or take the lottery, ads all over. Buy the lottery. Oh, look, there's $100 million. Buy the lottery. Buy the lottery. Then on the bottom of all those commercials, they say gambling can be dangerous to your health. I can't think of a more hypocritical approach because the people, oh, this is the greatest thing to, oh, I'm not going to do it because I may be addicted. I very few people have turned themselves in as addicts as a result of watching the commercial. But that's in a way what social media is doing, but they're not even giving the warnings.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really great point.
And the warnings again, and it infuriates me, and I know parents feel guilty, and I know parents feel helpless, and I know parents don't know what to do, and I know they blame themselves. Well, I'm the parent, I should be able to control what my kid does. But they make it impossible in the real world to control your parent. I mean, you could raise a kid and forbid him to use a computer, forbid him to use a telephone, forbid him to use all those things, but that's not going to work. And if it did work, he or she would have no one to talk to.
Yeah.
I mean, take the way people used to communicate by the telephone, where you could easily restrict the use. You're not talking on the telephone after 8 o'clock. You're not talking on the telephone in these days. You can't talk on the telephone when I'm not home, or whatever restrictions, or with TV, same thing. So people may, if they try to convey it to TV, in my generation, we didn't want our kids on TV all the time.
Yeah.
But it's different now. Even with video games, remember there used to be the huge hullabaloo about how video games encourage kids to engage in violent behavior. That can be controlled.
Yeah, if all of those things can be controlled, then why not social media?
That's our point. And
Yeah.
they have been controlled and they can be controlled and this must be controlled. And it sometimes amazes me in life where something that's is so wrong is so widely accepted because it's just there. I don't sometimes I don't understand how that happened.
Yeah.
But it happened.
And it happened really quickly.
Right. And it's being amplified 10 times by artificial intelligence. There is no question that if a company decides to do it, they could create a social media site that could addict a huge amount of children and keep them on them all day. And then it becomes the more you're on them, the more you're on it. It becomes that vicious cycle, I mean. So, what would I say to parents? I mean, I would say to parents, on the non-litigation point of view, see what your kid's doing. Watch for signs of addiction. They're not that subtle. If your child's on the phone or looking at his screen obsessively, that's a problem. If they're getting up at night and checking their whatever they're checking, that's a problem. If they don't want to play with their other friends and they want to stay home all the time, that's a problem. And these are real things that are affecting hundreds of thousands of people in a way that maybe you would argue doesn't result in a specific injury, but it's affecting quality of life, it's affecting growth, it's affecting the maturation process of our young people, period. My family is interesting. I have a lot of grandchildren. I can see. I should write a scientific article. The ones who aren't on social media as much are reading books. They're playing music. They're outside doing stuff. The ones who are on social media all the time are not reading books, are not playing outside, are not doing other stuff. They just simply can't wait till they can get to the phone. That because that where they're using, they can't wait till they can get their self in front of the screen.
And it's amazing how that works. And I mean, there is a huge polarization. I can see it within my own family as well, where my husband loves his phone and he loves the video games. He's on social media all the time. And it's something that we've discussed a lot because the more that he's on it, I can see noticeable upticks in depression, and just kind of withdrawal from other activities that he tends to enjoy doing. And so, yeah, we have made a conscious effort to really reduce our own personal screen time, both for the sake of our own mental health, but also to be role models for our kids. It's not fair to look at my 5-year-old and be like, no screen time for you, click, click, click. Or no phones at the dinner table, no tablet time at the dinner table while we're checking our emails or looking at Facebook. So in a lot of ways, yeah, as parents, we do have a responsibility to model those behaviors, and to be cognizant of our own addictive tendencies. But also getting our kids out there, throwing them out in the dirt, letting them run around, making them run around and enjoy childhood as it is intended to be enjoyed, both for the sheer pleasure of it, but also for the developmental aspects that they need in order to become healthy, functioning adults.
Sometimes I think, I know they use the term, it excites the dopamine, whatever that means, response in your brain. I think maybe it's because it's a way that you can get instant fake contact with people every second. Any behavior that you want to engage in, they'll reinforce it. Not only will they reinforce it, they'll target you. So if they find what sort of attracts you, they'll just keep
They'll give
giving
you
you
more of it.
more and more and more of it. And even adults can't escape. But I think the point you're raising about adults is crucial. This is adults who have lives, who have jobs, who work, who are parents. They can't keep away from it. So now, again, think of the effect it has on kids. It reminds me of, that great line from the movie with Matthew McConaughey, A Time to Kill, where he gives the story of the case where he's defending the black man. And then he says, now imagine if this was a white girl. So now imagine how you feel and put it in the context of a child who has none of, we do the best we can with our own mechanism, but they have none of those guarding mechanisms. So I'm talking in general about social media, but what I'm saying are the allegations that we're trying to convince the courts that make the product defective and make its promulgation negligent or unreasonable. And again, it's so crucial to say, do they have a duty? I think everyone agrees they have a duty to their consumers. Are they aware of the harm that it causes? Yes. Are they doing anything about it, or are they acting reasonable to mitigate it? That's the question. And if they're not, they shouldn't be allowed, to get away with it. They just shouldn't be allowed to do that. And that's where we are. And I am confident that, by a coordinated effort by the private attorneys, by the attorney generals who are filing these suits, by school districts, by academics, by governmental studies, and even hopefully our Congress, if they can ever do anything functional, change will occur. But it's because that's what happens. That's how change eventually occurs. And it's for those lawyers interested in getting involved in this, this is not for the shy. I mean, it's expensive, it's time consuming. You're going to have in very, very difficult hurdles. Sometimes if you're going to be get involved in this type of litigation, or you have clients that you think qualify, maybe at least initially you want to partner with someone who has gone down this path, because they can pick off individual lawyers. They can't pick off a concerted legal effort by groups of lawyers who are knowledgeable. And the one I actually forgot a very important thing. In addition to the people that are talking about what the problem is, there's whistleblowers. There's no longer a dispute. There's one or two very publicly known whistleblowers who have specifically said and verified, I'm not saying anything wrong. I don't know if anyone could actually listen to what we're saying. They might say, well, you can't sue for whatever reason, but I don't think I've said or you have said anything that someone could argue with.
No, these are just blanket facts of the matter.
They're just blanket facts. So when you have blanket facts, in my experience as a lawyer over many, many years in different areas, in nursing homes and in birth injuries and in product liability and in dangerous drugs, if you have the facts and if someone is making money off harming other people that they know are being harmed, there will eventually be justice for that. There will eventually something will happen. It can't last forever. I mean, tobacco lasted a long time. Opiates lasted a long time. Again, billion-dollar companies. Car manufacturers ignored safety for a long time. But just safety has to be part of the equation if you're making money off consumer behavior. It just has to be. I don't know the other side of that.
No,
And
it absolutely has to prevail. And with enough of a concerted effort, and a team going after this, as you said, as an individual lawyer, it'd be near impossible to get any traction, but working together. And if any of our listeners today feel that the need to get involved, really want to get involved or passionate about this, who should they reach out to in order to take next steps?
well, any of them, of course, can call our firm, which is Levin and Percani. We're on the internet. Our line is 312-332-2872. But I'll say this: I can't promise as a lawyer that I can help everyone insofar as filing a lawsuit on. But we will always, because we're involved in this, tell people where they may get help, where their kids can get help, where they can learn about the problem, where they can figure out ways to maybe help monitor their own child's behavior. But if they have the right case, we will take the case. And the right, all of the people who will call us, I'm sure are calling us because they've been harmed in some way. Maybe it's not that much, maybe it's a real lot. So they're all legitimate victims of social media, but for practical reasons, you need the right case to go forward it with to make this work. But call us, it's out there. And if you don't want to call a lawyer, I'd say to people, Google social media harms. And you'll get all the reports and you'll find out how the behavior becomes addictive. And by the way, this is not just something that's come up. I mean, I in researching these questions, there's articles that have been written on this subject from its infancy. The trouble is, as you said earlier, it's growing so unbelievably fast. So the ability for the harm to be enhanced, amplified, and spread is so much greater. And it changed, you know, it's like, you know, you knew what was it, to use your example, you knew what was happening at the playground. It wasn't all of a sudden they came up with a more improved playground where the bullies could be hiding. You don't know what's happening. I bet you and I right now, we're talking about social, I'm not even sure we're envisioning the same thing, but it's just something that our kids are getting harmed by.
Yeah.
And companies who are doing it knowing it. And I don't think it should be our sole responsibility to become a social media engineer to figure out how to prevent our kids from suffering what they're suffering. And again, that's part of our legal argument. We're innocent of what's going on. We didn't create it. We didn't encourage it. Best we're trying to do is mitigate it to the best that's possible, consistent with what's happening in the real world.
We just need the tools to help protect from the harms that it's causing.
You know, why don't they publicize these third-party apps? Look, we're going to, any kid who's on Facebook, they're going to get an app that by using artificial intelligence, a third-party app, will tell you if the certain words or phrases were used on your kids, in your kids' communications, that will say, uh-oh, I got to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, 'cause
obviously, there are some kids, it's not like, you know, some kids are improved and some kids are harmed. There's kids who are harmed and some kids who nothing bad happens to them. That's the other side. But you know, as a parent, it would be nice to have those tools. Why
yeah.
not have time restrictions?
And if they could just integrate with the social media platforms themselves and have that connected to a parent's social media platform, then as soon as you log in, you get a notification. Oh, you might need to go check what little Billy has been doing over on this forum. And there are so many creative ways that they could make this less harmful to kids and less harmful to the general population. And with as creative and tech savvy as they are, it's almost as, you know, willfully ignorant of the workarounds for this and the protections for this.
Well, because and unfortunately, the only explanation for that is financial gain. It's they don't want to incur the cost, and they don't want to, you know, I know social media company is out there saying, I want to limit viewers' attention.
Right.
So
right.
all these reasonable measures, unfortunately, might lead to that. Or maybe it'll lead to, you know, oh boy, there's all these restrictions. I noticed a time when my child's not on it, that his life seems better, which again will embolden, you know, part of what we do is drawing attention to a problem. A lot of people might think there's really nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
So another message I'm trying to put out there, there is something you can do about it.
There's hope here.
There's hope. There's
Yeah.
hope. Well, your kids are young enough, maybe we'll figure it out before they get on their own devices.
Well, and the bottom line is that if a company cannot stay in business and be profitable without damaging its consumers, that company should not be in business.
I 100% agree. And all the wrongdoers, you know, always use that defense. You know, well, if you allow us to sue nursing homes for bad conduct, there won't be any nursing homes. And again, that's a societal judgment. If people are happy about social media and they think it doesn't harm their kids, or they don't care whether it harms their kids or not, or they have some value that they attributed to it that makes it important, they can take that position and we'll hear what they have to say. But no one's doing that. So this is a little different. In for example, using the nursing home, because I think about the comparison, they are performing a valuable function. They're, you know, if operated correctly, they're providing a place for our most vulnerable older adults to live out the rest of their life. They should do it in a way without harming them. But again, to social media, what are they doing? What you know? So it's a pure question. I am convinced that if no child was ever on social media again, it would not, nothing bad would
Nothing
happen.
bad would happen. Only good things would happen if
Only
it
good things would happen.
was.
Whatever little bad that they you know, I don't know. Maybe we'll bring back the telephone or something. I don't know.
I could get my kids, one of the dumb phones. Have a flip phone. They can text message their friends, and I think the world would be a better place for it. Well, thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on to the show today and talk about all of this.
Well, your insights were extremely helpful, and thank you for having me. I appreciate it.